Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
There's still a couple of days to take advantage of the discounts going on all August long at Birdies. Birdies, of course, Memphis's number one spot for virtual golf, three golf simulators, full service bar, great TV selection as well. If you book your tee time in advance at golfatbirdies.com, if you have four players or more, you'll get 40% off the standard rates. Again, you got to book in advance. Three players, you'll get 30% off. Twosomes, 20% off. If you're a single, 10% off. Also, buy a full membership to Birdies and receive a six-month practice membership free of charge. Still got a couple of days to take advantage of that. Details on both memberships are available at golfatbirdies.com. Birdies right there in the South Main District of downtown. Also follow them on Instagram at birdies901. Let's get in the list. Greg Sankey. All right, Cobb, I'd reference this. Our good friends over at USA Today, they had a panel of experts that discussed and debated for hours and then settled on the top 25 most powerful people in college football. Greg Sankey came out number one, and my take is as follows. Greg Sankey has a lot of power. He is not nearly as powerful as the perception is.
Yeah, but if you're ranking the most powerful, who would you put above Greg?
Both TV executives.
Well, yeah, but he's now going to be the leading voice in the room on college football playoff expansion.
So this would be my argument. He's been the leading voice. He rarely gets his way. I mean, for God's sakes, he came up with a plan and everybody was so mad about Oklahoma and Texas, they scrapped the plan. And then when they came back, they took the 12-team playoff plan that he originally presented.
So I get where you're going with the TV executives piece of that, and you're not wrong, but it's like, who's the one? You know, right? Because ESPN's in that room. Fox is in that room. It's a power struggle among those networks, but there's no, like, one clear leader. Among the conference
I would say that I think I would argue, though, it's either Pitaro or Burt Magnus at ESPN.
Sure. I feel like the networks are more about the brand and the force behind the logo and the letters than they are any one individual, though. Whereas, like, the SEC, you associate Greg Sankey. Like, he's visible. I mean, you could debate whether or not he's as powerful as people make him out to be, but he's by far the most visible individual figure when it comes to shaping college sports.
So the top 10 is as follows. Number one was Greg Sankey. Number two was Burt Magnus, ESPN president. Number three is Tony Petitti, Big Ten commissioner. Number four is Mark Silverman, the Fox Sports president and COO. Number five was a combination of Steve Berman and Jeff Kessler, the antitrust attorneys that led the way to dismantle the amateurism model with the class action lawsuits, including House versus the NCAA. Six is Claudia Wilkin, the federal judge that approved the settlement. Seven is Pete Bavakwa, the Notre Dame athletic director. Eight is Brett Yormark, 9 was Rick Cordella, who's the president of NBC. 10 is Jimmy Sexton. My other hot take, Jimmy Sexton's too low.
Yeah, no doubt.
I do not think the average like sports writer understands how much power he yields.
Oh, it's unwieldy. I mean, that guy shapes the coaching hires. Now, I guess at the end of the day, like if Jimmy Sexton wasn't their agent, they would still have an agent and these coaches would still probably get to where they want to go. Jimmy Sexton's just really capable of making it happen. But when I think of like power, I think of change and like the power to affect change. And like, yes, Jimmy Sexton does that within the coaching ranks, but you think about the sport as a whole, college football as a whole. Yeah, it's, you know, it's the network presidents, it's Greg Sankey. It would be Nick Saban if Nick Saban wanted to exercise his power and like have his voice be more influential. But to me,
Who is the voice of the coaches now?
I think you could also argue that there needs to be an actual like media voice on that list. Like you could make the case for, I mean, love him or hate him, I think you could make the case for Kirk Herbstreit because nobody reaches more people than Kirk Herbstreit. Like he can shape the narrative around a team, around a conference, around a certain game because people are 10 million people are watching most often when he's talking.
That's interesting. I don't feel like he sways anything though. I do agree with you. He is probably the figure that's most prominent.
Yeah, he's pretty apolitical, right?
Like, yeah. In terms of the sport, yeah.
Right. But like if Herbie chose to start using his time in the press box of a marquee game on Saturday night to start letting us know his opinion on the transfer portal.
But does it carry the same gravitas? And, you know, like I think the thing that's interesting to me about Saban is for the most part the coaches, when he talked, all coaches listened. I don't get the sense when Kirby talks, everybody's listening.
No, not at all.
Is
you
there
gotta earn that though? I mean, Nick Saban had 5 national titles before he reached that level of just kingdom over the rest of the sport, right? Like Kirby is the undisputed, you know, top of the mountain right now, but him and Dabo, I mean, they both have multiple national titles and neither one of them can influence and shape things the way that Nick Saban could have.
And I guess this is the question. Is it a lack of a figure or is it maybe an implicit admission that in this era, coaches just really aren't that powerful?
Well, I think too, part of it is like, everybody still, to a certain extent, thinks of Kirby Smart as like Nick Saban's disciple, and he's the son of Nick Saban in some ways in college football's coaching tree. And I think it can sometimes be hard to create your own voice and divorce your image and your perception from that of the person who shaped you, right? So
I think also.
So yeah, basically, Kirby has daddy issues, is what I'm.
Well, I think the other thing is, I don't think Kirby's quite as obsessed with like legacy.
Yeah, he's obsessed with
Georgia
winning and
the dogs.
Right. I mean, he's about that business, about that job, about winning that next ring. And Nick Saban was too. But the thing about Nick Saban is like, if for whatever reason he had decided to go off and have a career outside of the game of football, like I think you could make the case that Nick Saban has the sort of intellect, the people skills, the leadership style that would translate away from the football field. I don't know if Kirby Smart, you can necessarily say the same for that.
Like, I can see
Nick Saban running a Fortune 500 company. I mean, Kirby Smart's obviously brilliant. One of the best coaches of this era in any sport, but could I see him calling the shots in the boardroom of a Fortune 500 company? I don't know.
Nah, he's definitely on the sales team.
For sure. And that's his personality. That's why he's a great recruiter. But everybody's got their kind of different strengths, and Saban was special in that way.
No, I mean, I'm with you on this. Maybe it's changing a little bit now, but the cult of coach and the mythologizing, it's like, guys, some of the most influential men in my life were my football coaches. But it's like, these guys are, like, if they weren't doing this, they'd be teaching PE and coaching high school football. Like, this we're not, when people would try.
That's literally what Jeremy Pruitt is doing.
Like,
after getting a show
call. That's what, and by the way, not that there's anything wrong with, but it just to drive me insane that people would act like that we're walking around in the, like, the presence of Steve Jobs.
Yeah, we still do that with, I think, with college basketball coaches to a certain degree. But the football coaches, it feels a bit, yeah, I mean, the expiration of that era, with Nick Saban, we'll say he was the last of it, but, I mean, you had Joe Paterno, you had Bobby Bowden, you had, I mean, I would even say to a certain extent, like, Mac Brown kind of fit that mold to a degree at Texas during the Vince Young and, you know, the heyday there. I mean, you had these certain coaches that were larger than life. Bear Bryant obviously being an early example of that. And yeah, I mean, but now it's like the players have more power now. So, you know, there's nobody on, there's not obviously going to be one player on that list, but that's the biggest dynamic that's changed. Like, if you're trying to figure out who's got the power and the influence in college football now, the players have way more of it than they did even 5 years ago.
You make an interesting point. Why do we, the cult of coach or cult of personality, however you want to define it, why is it more prevalent in college basketball versus football? Because they both are sports that are largely driven by NIL budgets. And secondly, it's kind of this weird thing of, we always kind of convince ourselves that a good coach can make up for a talent gap. But we think that in football, but we don't really. In basketball, we always just think like, all right, who's got the best players?
Well, it, somewhat related to the discussion, Tennessee has just announced that Rick Barnes has received a lifetime contract extension. Not something you typically expect for a coach who's already north of 70, but he's obviously done a good job there. So I guess he'll be there until he decides he doesn't want to be there anymore.
So talk me through this, because I never knew how serious to buy it, but you would say it's fair that there were rumors that Rick, after last year, was going to retire.
Well, there, it was more of a suspicion that he was so tight with Zakai Ziegler and Jemiah Mayshak that the thought of reinventing yourself after those two departed would just be too much for him to really want to go through with at his age. And then I think there's also this element of it, Jeffrey. This is a guy that probably wants to be in position to pick his successor. But I don't think that his tree has been fruitful enough. And it was the same way for Coach K and for Roy Williams. Their trees were not fruitful enough that there was an obvious successor. John Shire would not be the head coach of any other institution right now other than Duke. Hubert Davis would not be the head coach of any other institution right now except for North Carolina. And, like, if you're Rick Barnes and you want it to be your guy, like, you've kind of got to hang on for a while longer until guy kind of emerges and makes himself worthy of the occasion.
I'll actually go one further for you. I think if you want your guy, I think you kind of now have to do what Tony Bennett did, which is basically leave like in October and there's not enough time. Because I think even though, like, I kind of put Carolina and Duke in a different category, because while Rick is one of the sport's most successful coaches, like, he's not synonymous with the University of Tennessee. Whereas, like, I think now these schools have so much money involved and there's only so many of the gigs open. Like, if Rick Barnes were to say, I want to pick my guy, I think Danny White would be making a mistake saying, sure.
Like, I agree with that.
I'd say, Rick, I appreciate everything that you did. And by the way, look at your bank account. But, like, this is the University of Tennessee. Like, we can get a, like, we can be, I mean, literally, if the Tennessee basketball job comes open, I mean, what? Top 10, top 15 job?
Yeah, yeah. I think Danny White would have to look outside the family because there's no obvious internal hire there. So, unless there's something in this contract that's probably, oh, did you see this, Jeffrey? So, you know, Tennessee is following suit along with a lot of other athletic departments and breaking off. It basically into a third party foundation.
Whatever. The thing that Kentucky did over the summer.
Well, yeah, and it's going to redact them or keep them from having to disclose what would normally be public records. So, for example, this new lifetime contract, if they wrote it through their foundation or their third party, you know, the Knoxville News Sentinel, for example, might not be able to do a public records request for it. So there could be language in that contract.
Whoa. Is he still not a university employee?
Well, I know that particularly was the case with their Adidas contract. It was a big deal that they switched from Nike to Adidas because Adidas.
By the way,
you know, you.
I want to offer my sincere, heartfelt condolences to every Tennessee fan out there. There's nothing worse than hearing that your team is going from Nike to Adidas.
Yeah, right. And it was such a big deal like 8 years ago when they went from Adidas to
Nike.
Yeah,
like remember, like, I mean, I know people can fire off their Derek Dooley jokes. One of my favorite things he ever did was he was so annoyed at how bad Adidas was at getting the orange right that he went to Adidas's headquarters and was like, "This is the color. Get it to look like this."
Hey, look, you want a politician who will get boots on the ground and go knocking on doors to get things right. That's right. Why he's running for Senate in the state of Georgia.
He's like the opposite of what I would think about most football coaches. I almost think he was probably too smart of a person to actually be like a successful football coach.
Oh, yeah. He should have been a politician all along.
Yeah, he was a lawyer. Like he should have been exactly what he was trained to do. He should have been a lawyer and a political figure.
Yeah, instead he was coaching quarterbacks and trying to coach at Louisiana Tech and
I always got the sense though he coached because his last name was Dooley. I never was I never got the sense of like, you know what? That's like his passion.
Exactly. Like I think he liked football. I think football was interesting to him. I think he liked being around football, but like he would have been better suited to be the partner in a law firm who coached Pee-wee on the weekends, you know, to scratch that itch, right? Like you can be involved in football without having to make it your vocation.
The other thing I was trying to also shout out USA Today to put Trump at 11.
Well, he did play golf with Greg. Did you see that Blake Topmeyer, our buddy, got into the discussion with Greg Sankey about what his round of golf was like with President Trump?
So Blake will be on tomorrow. I got like the Twitter blast, but I've not read the whole article because I usually read whatever Blake writes tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. I want to give too many spoilers, but
hey, go ahead.
Well, so in the story, Sankey reveals to Blake that he's shot something like in the low 90s and that Trump offered him a mulligan after he hit a wayward tee shot. So Little glimpse into their pairing.
Everybody knows Trump's cheats at golf, right?
I don't even think that's a partisan opinion. I think that's held belief.
Guys, like that video from when he was playing in Scotland at his golf course, where the caddy just like runs up and then just drops the ball. That literally was like a scene out of Caddyshack. Like that's something that Danny would have to do for Judge Smales.
It's amazing. It's kind of everything you hope it would be, you know?
Yeah, no, I don't even think that's that hot to take. All right, Doris Burke. All right, Cobb, Andrew Marchand of The Athletic is now reporting that Doris Burke has been demoted from ESPN's NBA A team, and Tim Legler's getting promoted. Leaving aside the Twitter takes on this, I don't like this. And not for the reasons that I'm trying to get likes on the Insta. I think this is another example, yet again, of the leagues punishing announcers that are critical of the product.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Doris Burke was fine. Like, I understand there were a lot of criticisms with that A-team ESPN broadcast crew during the playoffs. They weren't great. Like they weren't a well-oiled machine. But
it was honestly at times it was like it felt to me it was like you're watching three people that are on a team but they were just like individual. Like they were trying to like get their own stuff. Like Breen's the play-by-play, but like there was no cohesion whatsoever. It was just like three separate entities.
So now you get Tim Legler in there. I think if I'm ESPN, I make it about Legler, right? Like you got to control the narrative here. I think Legler is pretty good. He's just a little bit vanilla. Like there's nothing about Tim Legler that is flashy. For example, like you think about most NBA broadcast crews are anchored by either in the studio show or on the sideline. It's a former NBA star. Like I realize Tim Legler did play in the NBA, but nobody remembers Tim Legler's playing career.
I was going to say, other than when they put Tim Legler in the graphic and it says whatever, like 11-year vet or however, I don't remember how long he played. Would anyone know that he played basketball?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So, I mean,
and I mean that with all due respect. Like, this is like, that's to your point. It's like, even though like we know, basically we only know he played because they told us.
Yeah. I think the worst thing to ever happen to ESPN's NBA crew was basically the fact that JJ Redick left to become a coach. Cause I think he could have been like,
well,
really
and
good.
Like,
he was good. Like, I think he could have been like the
and
next
Doc,
great
like,
color
I,
commentator.
I don't love Doc the coach. I do like Doc the broadcaster.
For sure. Yeah. Like they needed, like they're going to demote Doris Burke. They needed to either make it all about Tim Legler or go and hire somebody who has a name. Now the story is that Doris Burke got demoted, which looks bad because one, I mean, she was, like, you know, a female in a very prominent role in the broadcast, sports broadcasting, which is a very difficult plateau for anyone to reach, let alone a woman.
The only female lead analyst.
Demoting her without really, like, without there being some obvious stud star, like, oh, well, this makes sense sort of replacement. So, I mean, I don't know. It kind of looks bad on ESPN a little bit.
I think it was a lead call. Doris was highly critical this year. Remember, she would openly talk about the SGA foul baiting. Like, this is my thing. I don't care if I disagree with you. I just want somebody to say something interesting. And
like she's creating debate. Like, I feel like the NBA is all about debate and discussion and like social media banter and like, this hot take versus, you know, whatever. Like, you know, she was bringing that to the conversation by introducing the SGA foul baiting to a wider national audience. I mean, I guess I understand the NBA not wanting that to be the prevailing narrative from their NBA Finals series, but at the same time, like it did keep the NBA and like those games in the discussion when they weren't really all that interesting.
George just sent this over. Jay Wright's no longer a coworker for you.
Yeah, old Jay, you know, he texted me this morning and just said, hey,
why didn't you get to break that news?
I don't know. He's going to focus on his special advisor role at Villanova. So I don't know what that means for the
Is this the first step to him getting back?
Because he'll get bored, I think, if he's just in this advisory capacity.
My thing is, I've always been told, like, the gig that he has is, like, the greatest gig in sports.
Yeah, you only work, I mean, really, honestly, like, you really work about 4 months of the year.
And on top of that, like, you're just sitting around watching games, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's that's interesting to me.
I think people like that, sometimes they miss being on a team, being part of a team. Not that the broadcasting unit isn't, you know, a
but
team
it's different.
Or whatever, but
it's different.
It is. Like, yeah, it is.
No, I'm with you entirely. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Jason Smith joins the program next. Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Skip the gym, not the workout. With Hydro, you get a full body workout in just 20 minutes, hitting 86% of your muscles in one smooth, low impact motion. And now there's a new Hydro Arc, Hydro's most advanced rower yet. Arc introduces Hydro Metrics, tracking your power, endurance, and precision every time you row, so you can actually see your progress. Go to Hydro.com and use code FIT to get $100 off any Hydro rower, including Arc. That's HYDROW.com, code FIT.
not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Jason Smith is the co-host of the Jason and John Show weekdays from 11 until 2 right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Follow him on X at JasonSmith929. Jason, I've decided that the pass fail for Tiger football this year, I think you got to be the championship game. Like, to me, that's pass fail, because at a certain point, we're going to start asking the question, what's the money for?
100%. And I would use, you know, a team that's going to be, you know, going to be playing here in, shortly against South Florida as the example. You know, I think any time that Boise State is not in its conference championship game, it looks at that as a failure. And that is where, you know, Memphis has basically said out loud. I mean, Ed Scott has said it in terms of the resources now and where you expect to be positioned in the group of five while you're, you know, for as long as you're sitting outside this power four, hey, we're going to be the most resourced. And so why wouldn't you have the same level of expectation? I realize it feels like we're trying to, you know, and John's one of those guys, I think, that is, you know, the last year or so realizing too last year what you failed to cash in on, which was a chance to win your conference, you pick number one, and at least be in the talk for an appearance in the college football playoff that, you know, I know my man Dan Walken, we had him on earlier this week. I think he kind of dismissed it as what it would do for Memphis. You know, a college football playoff appearance in the sense that, you know, we were discussing the whole shifting to football. What's the ceiling? But we got to that point of, well, what's an appearance do? And while no, I mean, Dan's point, you're never going to win a national championship. No, we get that. We understand that. It's not about that. It's about having the brand as hot as you can possibly have it. And just making it, I mean, look at the benefit of the doubt that Boise State gets every year, whether it's in the rankings or whatever else, and you got to give them credit for what they built. But that's what you should aspire to. And just the appearance itself, we saw when Memphis was winning conference championships in 2019, appearing on game day, what the buzz that created. You want that buzz back between now and 2030, as much of it as you can get back. Frankly, it'd be great to have it the whole time, but you want to be at that level when hopefully, again, the, you know, conference realignment talks start again and we see where Memphis could eventually end up as what you're hoping to position yourself as, the best thing in the group of five. You don't do that by not appearing. Yes, Jeffrey, back to the start of your question, a long answer to the question, but I couldn't agree more. You don't do that by not regularly appearing in conference championships games. This team has not made one since Silverfield's been the coach. Frankly, you need to be in it. That should be the bar this year, and it'd be nice to finally break through and win one, although I'm not going to put that sort of pressure on them in a year where they've got so many new starters.
Well, and this is high key, a big opening weekend for the American, because only tonight with South Florida playing Boise State and, of course, with East Carolina playing NC State, but like FAU could beat Maryland. It's possible that Tulane, I would say even likely that Tulane could beat Northwestern. So you got a chance here as a league to go out and make a little bit of a statement in week one and say, hey, Mountain West, thanks for playing, but, you know, we're the top dogs in the G5 now.
Well, and that's why I'm really interested, and you hit it right there off top. You know, this South Florida game, I think if you're anybody in the AAC, you're, of course, pulled. This one, you know, if you're pitting, and it's essentially what it's been since we've had this, you know, group of five spot in the current system, a pitting of the Mountain West versus the winner of the American. Remember last year, Memphis was the slick pick, I think, over at the Athletic, and maybe even with you guys, Cobb at CBS Sports, that the Athletic, I think Memphis had the majority of votes as the rep. But in these last, you know, the way it's set up, you two conferences are the ones battling for it. You know, before we all head off some to the Pac-12, we'll see what happens. We go to group of six. But right now it's set up. And so if Boise State, which also has Notre Dame on its schedule, takes this early loss, well, that's a huge win, obviously, to what you alluded to, for the American. And anybody that can get a win over South Florida, oh, by the way, Memphis has them at Simmons Bank, well, that's a check in your box, especially if you can go on, whether you're in, you know, hopefully win your conference, you can go on and get a win over a South Florida team. Well, that win is great for you all of a sudden. And so, and not to mention the American. And so, and listen, you know, Alex Golish, I mean, I was a Heupel disciple, if I'm not mistaken. I think it might have even gone back to UCF before Tennessee. And then what is he? Tennessee's OC comes in a couple of years ago with a lot of shine, and folks figuring, okay, he's going to get South Florida to where it needs to be. It's been a couple of, 500 seasons over the first 2 years. I think folks are hoping that this is sort of the breakout for him. And if you look over at Tulane, in a lot of ways, John Summerall's kind of become the guy in terms of the next hot riser. Whereas maybe, you know, folks were looking at Golish as that and maybe still are, but if he wants to still be that guy and stay on these lists, right, this is the year that they need to break through. And so if you've got Byron Brown, we've talked about it, when he's healthy, he's been good. You know, I'm really interested to see how this looks, because I get, you know, South Florida's at home. Boise State's replacing Ginty, but they've got 14 starters back. And if the AAC could somehow pull off the upset, it would be a huge win. And particularly just looking at it through the prism of Memphis, oh, man, then you'd have a chance to knock off. But for whoever, you know, hopefully the AAC would have a leg up on that group of five spot in the college football playoffs. So you're right, a big weekend for that. I want to tell you, UTSA's got somebody big.
A&M.
We'll get a chance. There it is. We'll get a chance to look at, you know, this high-powered UTSA offense that we're expecting to see again. You know, are they going to get beat up? That's going to be a question for them. But some have UTSA. You know, I know there's some variance on them. I want to tell you, though, I think it's my over at the Commercial Appeal, they've got UTSA in the power rankings, like top three, top four. And so, and I respect the heck out of Trailer. So a big weekend, certainly, for the AAC. It starts at 4:30. Very interested to see how it pans out.
I was thinking about it in these terms. If they don't even get to the championship game, Ed has said it on the record, basketball pays the bills, football's got to be our future. Isn't that going to, like, I feel like internally that's going to be a difficult, like, road to navigate. Because I just think at that point, the chimes from, and again, I know what Ed's saying, and it's like, I think he's right, but there's going to be this push and pull of, really? That's what we're spending all our money on?
Yeah. Now, we've talked about this with Ed. If you're going to, and he's talked about it too. We got a chance to have him on the show the one time. But if you're going to make this shift, which we, a lot of us, and Jeffrey, I'm with you, that you believe, Dan Walken is not, but what we are aligned on this. Well, you got to back it up. John and I have talked this through. I mean, you're holding football to really, you're just asking it for the same level of account that you're asking of your basketball, that you've asked of your basketball program, where, listen, if we're going to resource this thing to the best of anybody in the AAC, you have to produce conference championships. And so you're holding, you love the 21 wins. You love the wins over a bowl win over a Big 12, you know, over West Virginia. But what you must have, where you're coming up short, where Ryan Silverfield has not kept it at the level, which was part of the campaign to keep the job. Hey, I'm within house in 2019. I know what this program needs, and I know how to keep it where it from. Well, from a conference championship standpoint, you've taken a step back. And so back to your question. If you're Ed Scott and you're talking the talk, that, hey, now's the shift, now's the time, look at where we're doing all of this investing right now, it's in football. Well, then if you come up short, you're holding, again, your football coach to a new level of accountability. And so does that mean a 7-5, you say, Ryan, you got to go? No, you got to walk through some things and see if you're willing to pay 60% of his buyout. You probably aren't at this point. And based on the 21 wins the last 2 years, no, you're probably not saying, well, you're fired. But at some point, just like Boise State, again, you're talking about this, it's murky, because you can't sell that we're making the shift, we've got this new standard, if you're not holding that coach to conference championship sort of aspirations. You know, at some point, look at what Boise State did to Avalos. We've used him as an example, had a 10-win season 1 year, I think won the conference that year. Next year, and it's lower than what 7-5 would be, but I think it was 5-5, they fired him. He was the guy who had played there, but he was not meeting the standard. just 1 year. And that's sort of the way Memphis should be looking at this if they're repeatedly not going to make conference championship games. You have to now. It's a new game. And frankly, you got more Monopoly money than you've ever had before. So you should be chomping at the bit to get one of these. And last year you were picked. You came up short, essentially was fourth because you tied with Navy and lost to them. And no, it needs to be better. Even in a reset year, you've gone out and you've hit the portal. You've hit it well. Most folks seem to think you've probably got overall the best roster in the AAC. So, yeah, you should be back in the championship game. And Ed Scott, if you're coming up short, should be telling Ryan, well, this isn't good enough, and should be willing to do something about it if it doesn't get better quickly.
Well, on the basketball side, bad news today for those who are yearning to see the resumption of the Tennessee-Memphis basketball series. Got a lifetime contract extension for Rick Barnes well at Tennessee.
That is that's very well put, Cobb. You're right. It's over for good for as long as Rick wants to never play Memphis. I was just looking. I mean, he's 71, and I know a lot of the coaches that were his, Roy Williams, Coach K, have gotten out. I think Boeheim was considerably older. A lot of them have said, no, I'm not going to do this. And it's funny that he gets this today. We brought him up with Coach Hurd yesterday because they had some kids up at the Tennessee Elite Camp that yep. Barnes was running.
He was up there too.
Yeah, just offered up a couple of Memphis guys got offers, I believe. But we were talking about the job he's done, because most of us, I'm one of them, I hold my hand up, thought that you were getting a Rick Barnes that had sort of seen his best days, behind him at Texas. And that, you'd never get Tennessee past a point where Bruce Pearl had it, which felt like the height, at least to me. And although, yes, he's never broken through, what he's put together year after year now, the way he has, embrace the transfer portal era at a time, again, where guys his age haven't kind of wanted to play this game. You can't do anything but give him a ton of credit. He's got a Memphian on the staff now that I covered back at Cordova, Amaro Morgan, who had paid his dues. He's come on as assistant now. And he's just smart, man, and willing to adapt and change. And so it's those guys I respect. Yeah, I lament the fact that now we'll never see him for sure while Rick Barnes is there. But listen, I'm sure that every time Rick Barnes has got a kid in now, probably there's a parent or two that want to say, how much longer are you going to do this, right? Especially if you've got maybe some of the younger ones that are a couple of years before they're going to, have a chance to play for him. They're still, juniors in high school or whatever. I'm sure he gets that question about how much longer are you going to do this? I mean, he's 71 years old. And this is the way this is a way that you can help put that to bed. Clearly if you got a life, if you put a lifetime on it, says the guy still wants to do it. He's energetic. He's going to be here a while. And I imagine in a lot of ways that helps answer that question for any of those recruits that are still asking it. So, no, it's probably smart on the part of Tennessee, because I never thought Rick Barnes would be, and I got to give the man credit. He hadn't broken through, sure, but when has Tennessee ever broken through? He's got you right back as electric as he's ever been, maybe more so than ever. And you got to give the man credit, man. He reinvigorated when he got the gig. And so I can't do anything but tip my cap to him.
Did y'all see this story from the Louisville Courier-Journal that Louisville's engaging in discussions with the NCAA about trying to get their national championship banner back?
Yeah, I believe, and I didn't get to hear it, but Bennett Doyle was telling us that GP weighed in on this and said, should Louisville get this done? Well, that Memphis said absolutely has to go back to the table for what was taken off in the runner-up year and the banner that still doesn't hang in FedEx Forum to this day.
But it does hang in our studios.
It hangs in our studios, but we'd have to get us a Final Four banner or something hanging in FedEx Forum, or a runner up or something up there. If Louisville's going to get this, because as Bennett put it, remember, and then Gary must have said some version of this, or that Louisville situation was out of control compared to the situation you had with D. Rose. I mean, what are we talking about here? So
no, I mean that's the thing with Derek.
Better get straightened out.
It's like, do I really believe Derek took his own SAT? No.
Bro,
do I also
we won the game. Clearinghouse cleared him.
Do I think that they prove? It's like they didn't prove it.
Thank you. You don't go back retroactively. You didn't prove it. The thing that we got through the system, bro. You don't go that was a raw deal. I'm glad that Derek at least has seemingly put it behind him in terms of his feelings about his time at the U of M. I think we've heard from him enough now to know. I mean that situation was awful. We're through. If Louisville gets that back, where they work some deal, but then we automatically should be rewarded with that runner-up banner.
Cobb, is that the only title that has been vacated?
Did they not take one of UConn's titles?
Mm.
I think maybe the AP took a USC, one of the Reggie Bush titles. Didn't they take that maybe?
Just give everybody their titles. Everybody's getting paid now. I don't care if you took your ACT, if somebody went to class for if you took a bracelet, whatever.
I thought post-pandemic we weren't even taking test scores.
Right, yeah. Right. So it'd be nice to have it back, and then we can just we've got it right there in the hallway, don't we, Jeffrey? Isn't that the
it's right in front of Gary's old office.
There it is. There it is, and we'll just bring it back and hang it in its rightful place in the forum.
Y'all could have a parade. You could just walk, the whole 90s.
Yeah, it's like the president hands over the nuclear football. Like we can bring it back. Like have a procession.
Might as well, as long as it's been since they've been to even a Sweet 16. What are we going on 16 years now? 15, 16? My gosh, the nostalgia does. It brings back goosebumps.
What's Cal's distinction? He's the only man that's had multiple Final Four banners removed at multiple schools.
Now, don't forget, he'll be here in a few days, hopefully, to announce a charity classic for St. Jude that's going to help benefit us.
What better time to put the banner back up,
If you could get it done, but the NCAA in Memphis, it never works that fast. Well, even if Louisville got it done, it'd take us 5 years.
Anyone ever tried... What if they just hang it up? What is the NCAA going to do? We're going to start taking wins away from you now? Like, what?
And we've done this before. I know, you could sort of say it symbolically. You did it with James Wiseman, kind of throwing the finger sign to the NCAA saying
hanging a banner is different than actually playing someone that you've been told is ineligible.
But I'd like to see them come in here and take it down. This is Memphis. Who's going to go up there and take it from him? So I'm not against your proposition there. Just go ahead and hang it anyway.
Like seriously, what would they do? Try to punish these teams?
Probably give Penny a show cause
or a fine? Maybe fine the school.
There you go. Penny suspended, fine school. Some fine sounds probably appropriate. For as long as you've got it up. I have no idea. But Lord knows, since it's Memphis, they would definitely send folks down for it and investigate it.
I want to see on a ladder with Jeffrey Wright fighting over a banner, inside FedEx Forum. That's what I want to see. We could really make it into a Memphis wrestling event, too. Bring an NCAA rep, get Jeffrey up there on the ladder, have him duke it out.
I mean, there is pain associated with that thing, too, because it was so in hand and it's so supposed to be a championship banner, which I do not believe would have been taken down. The NCAA wouldn't have done it to you. I don't know. Maybe with Louisville's situation later on, maybe they would have. But I still don't believe if Memphis had won the championship that they would have done what they did in that situation. So that's what should be hanging, quite frankly, is the unfortunately Mario Chalmers and some missed free throws cost us that. So there is some pain involved with having to look up there at that as well.
All right, my man, be good.
Y'all take care.
That is Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show. When we come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, boys, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. Have y'all been seeing the media tour that Drew Brees has been doing, insisting that he's actually going to be a good broadcaster, even though we watched him as a broadcaster? Well, he was on with Dan Patrick, and he insisted that when he left NBC Sports, the decision was mutual. Quote, "It was my decision to step away from NBC. It was not theirs. They wanted me back. Unfortunately, I think it got reported a little bit differently, and now somehow that's become the narrative. It could not be further from the truth."
Oh, really, Drew?
Go on. Please say more. All right, boys, we made it. We're about 30 minutes away from kickoff. Let's go enjoy it.
Let's do it. Thanks, man.
That is David Cobb of CBS Sports. For George, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. Gabe Kinn Show's coming up next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do? Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.